This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. After the massacre at Tiananmen Square in June of 1989, Shen Tong was the first student leader to escape from China to the United States. He's now a student at Brandeis University. In exile, he continues to work for democracy in his country, raising money and forming alliances with other freedom groups around the world. Shen has written a memoir called Almost a Revolution. On April 27, 1989, Shen Tong helped lead over 8,000 students to Tiananmen Square, convincing police to let the students pass. During the occupation of the square, Shen ran the Student News Center and organized the dialogue delegation, which negotiated with government officials. On the night of the massacre, Shen was in one of the bloodiest areas, just off Tiananmen Square. The dead and wounded lay all over the sidewalks. Army tanks were heading for the avenue while foot soldiers fired into the crowd.
I was totally shocked by the shooting, but by some point, the troops stopped, and with some other people, we hold a shirt from Coops, from somebody who died before, and it's gone down by the other soldiers. And we were trying to show them and prevent them, you know, trying to show them what their comrade has done, you know, to stop their shooting. And so when we get in the middle of the road where all the trucks and, soldier carriers stopped there, I was just started to talking. And when I started to talk, I just couldn't help to, you know, to keep going. And especially when I find out some soldier, you know, when I ask him, does he know where he is? He shakes his head. It was very surprising. They were cheated by the government. They didn't know what they're doing. They thought, you know, it's kind of they're trying to push away some counter-revolutionaries or or minority uprising, you know, some of them were told they're getting to Tiananmen Square to save the people there. So, you know, I just talking to the young soldier there about my age. And I didn't pay attention. Some officer on that truck pointed his pistol to me, and my friends draw me back. About the time he fired, but the bullet didn't catch me. Catched a girl stand right beside me. She was very young. She was like 19 years old, and I heard she was a freshman in a university in Beijing. And she got the bullet right on her face, and she just fell back and died immediately. I was trying to turn my body back when other people drew me on side road to have another look on her. But what I saw is just a bloody hole on her face.
After the girl next to you was shot, how did you get away?
My relatives and a friend of mine drove me back from the middle of the road to the sidewalk, and then they carried me on their bicycles to a place where they had me, to several places where they had me for a week before I finally fled out of China.
Can you describe what you saw of the massacre that night?
When I was there, you know, the troop, it's all still, I mean, when I reflect, all the still unbelievable. The troop, you know, with tanks and, you know, tens of trucks loaded soldiers rushing downtown area from the Eternal Peace Avenue. And they were shooting most to the sky and to the ground in front of the people. You know, there are thousands of Beijing people out there. They get used to that for 2 weeks already. They sleep during the daytime, and they came out during the nighttime to try to stop the army's effort to rush in the Tiananmen Square and drive away the peaceful student hunger strikers. And although the government warned them, you know, there would be a serious action during the massacre night, they didn't pay attention to that at all. You know, I was feeling, this probably sounds very strange to a lot of Americans, I was feeling a festival atmosphere during the massacre night. You know, no matter what kind of thing you put to us, troops, machine guns, or even tanks, you know, you can't conquer our spirit. After, you know, 5 weeks or 7 weeks, demonstrations, people spiritually completely conquered the Communist Party's control. So, you know, there were, although the soldiers were shooting and nobody left the street, and a lot of people gone down on the street, and people were still trying to stop the troops. And when the troop passed, you know, people followed the troop, and the soldiers on the trucks shoot at them. A lot of people on the front line lay down, but people just keep going and still trying to stop the troop. And people cried out slogans to ask the soldiers stop shooting to the student and people on the street. But when people carried me away from the place where a lot of killing happened, I met several locations where the people catch some soldier and beat them up, and some of them, you know, just died by the angry people. So that's the time I felt so sad, you know, in the capital of my country, soldiers are killing people and people are killing soldiers. Although it's the soldier initialed the confrontation, but there, I think for me, the soldier who died also victim of the Beijing regime, because they don't know what they were really doing. You know, they got this order, they were cheated by the government. But the whole situation was so sad.
You were one of the organizers at Tiananmen, but you were hoping to get compromises and talks with the government, and you were hoping that the students, the hunger protesters, would go home. Why did you hope that things would disperse, that people would disperse at Tiananmen?
Well, I started to involve in the political movement far before the 1989 movement. For the student organized activists like me and several others, we were really planning for the 1989 movement for a long time. And for us, we realized there must be enough lead period or evolutionary process before the mass movement happened. And I didn't think China was ready for a complete social revolution at that time. So, and also, probably a lot of people in the Western world didn't realize the pro-democracy movement in China is not only by its opposition political force. The internal reform, the reformers' internal struggle, internal power struggle with versus conservatives are also part of the pro-democracy movement. So on the one hand, we should go ahead to, you know, try to raise people's awareness as much as possible, try to push China on the reform road. On the other hand, we should protect the reformers who have already have their power inside the current government, you know, through that internal reform way, kind of Hungary's approach for almost 30 years, more than 30 years already. You know, so this is fine balance as opposition political force, and also gets a sense to cooperate, you know, with the reformers inside the government.
Was there a point when you and the other people who were part of the leadership at Tiananmen felt that you had lost control, that the crowd and the spirit had a life of its own? Did you ever feel that way?
Yeah, it's kind of... I had the feeling at the time, like, I started a car and somebody take away the steering system and I couldn't get off the car and the car is going to a cliff, you know? So that's time for a period of time when the movement, I was kind of lost power, lost my role in the leadership of the movement. I was so frustrated. On the other hand, I thought probably it's the time, you know, probably we can make it, although as a whole, the society was not quite ready. But seeing the large scale of the support we got, seeing the movement lasting so long, I was hoping, you know, the radicals in the student leadership, they're right, you know. And so although the outcome proved, you know, China was not ready, but I was really think of, you know, it's very controversy inside of me during the last part of the movement.
What had you planned and what had you hoped for? When you were one of the people who led around 8,000 students into Tiananmen, What did you think was going to happen? And what did you hope was going to happen? What kind of ending did you foresee?
Yeah, as we talked before, there are different type of views by other student leaders. But for the people like me, and we're really planning in a long-term run. We want this progressive and gradual means. So we see the 1910 movement is just as one of the ways to push China forward. We were thinking that's a long way to go. But the outcome, during the movement, the movement itself spread out so rapidly, and we got such a large support. It's kind of, for me now, when I reflect all this, I think it's different approaches, different factors of pro-democracy movement, the internals, reformers, the opposition political force, and the whole nation's general progress for the recognition of their political involvement. All these three approaches joined the effort together too early and too quickly during the 1989 movement. I think that's a mistake we made, and that mistake, I think, is inevitable. Whenever a country with a suppression so strong, like China, get in this kind of mass movement, it's just like a broken dike. No one, even on this side, like on the mass movement side, people like me want to plan, want to have, really control. No one can really control it. So the next task for the future for us is to trying to keep this balance, trying to find the right moment to, trigger the mass movement.
Tell me about your parents and their reaction to your leadership position in the pro-democracy movement. I wonder how they felt about young people rebelling. Were they confident that young people had the wisdom as well as the courage?
Yes, and people in China did. That's one thing, the main point, one of the main points I try to make through the book, which I want the people in the world understand. My generation, which is quite different from the generations in China previously, I want people through this book, through my personal story, to understand this generation, how this generation grew up, where the 1989 movement come from. And based upon this, they can hopefully understand where it's leading to. But when I say my generation is very different, there's several aspects in this. First of all, my parenthood and people even just older than us, like 10 years older than us, we call them cultural revolution generations, which is what they grow up in the period of 1966 to 1976, which is a big political campaign and the disaster for China. It's called Cultural Revolution, initiated by the Mao Zedong. And my generation is so-called open-door policy generation, which is, we grew up in this open-door policy period right after the Cultural Revolution period, which is totally different economical and political situation. And my parents, my parenthood and the Cultural Revolution generation, they experienced a lot, they suffered a lot. So on the one hand, they grew up generally in this chaotic period of China's history. They concerned very much about China's political situation. On the other hand, they experienced so much suffering, so much bitterness. They can't really find out, the way to participate, because there's no way to participate in the political movement. In China, if you are in the situation like Cultural Revolution, all the political campaigns before the Cultural Revolution and after 1949, the founding of the People's Republic of China. So on one hand, especially family like my family, their intellectual background family, they brought me up in a very liberal atmosphere and have a lot of concern about the society and political situation in China. On the other hand, they really don't know exactly how to keep this balance. You should concerned and unconcerned. in a way about situation. You should concern mentally, but you should keep away, you know, from the real involvement. And I think what my generation has done and what we are doing is a great lesson for them, you know, because they are kind of, you know, give up in a lot of ways. They think they're still concerned, they still feel strongly for the future of China, but they don't really think they can make the difference.
And you know, but I'm wondering if a lot of the people of the older generation felt that the conclusion at Tiananmen Square confirmed their worst fears, that the pro-democracy movement, instead of permanently changing China, ended up in a massacre and a crackdown where freedoms that had been won before were taken away.
Well, there's certainly this reaction to the reality, but there's another part which I think is more important, which is the student, and I think the people feel more strongly about this part is the student during this, not only the 1989 movement, but the 10 years movement before the last spring event, really gives the people the opportunity to express themselves in the society, to vent their anger, to really involve without severe, you know, political trouble, involved in the social affairs. You know, student provides the chance for them to really taste freedom, although it's taken away quickly. But whenever people, you know, taste freedom, there's no way to stop them.
When you started becoming an activist on campus, were you worried about student informers and teacher informers? Were there a lot of people on the campus who would gladly inform on an activist?
The government system is very advanced in China. I think on a lot of aspects, China is quite underdeveloped, but in this aspect, it's very advanced. I don't know a lot in this country, but I think it's quite even more advanced than the Nixon period. And they have, in each department, they have, we also call them teacher, but they kind of take care of all the political issues from, you know, every student. They keep files on everybody, and this file is close to the person. You have no chance to see what in your file, and if something, you know, like political trouble, you know, they keep record in your file, you will suffer all your life.
After the massacre, you managed to escape from China, and you're now a student at Brandeis. Had you already been accepted to Brandeis before Tiananmen Square?
Since my involvement in 1988, I really worried, because after that movement, I got a lot of pressures, political trouble. I really worried if I can continue my study or not after I graduated from Peking University. So that's the time I started to apply American schools, and I was really lucky. I got in several schools before the 1989 movement started, but I didn't had time to prepare all the document, which this probably is hard for Americans to understand. The normal process in China for Chinese to get their passport and the necessary document is minimally 2 or 3 months. So I was so deeply involved in the movement, I even started to think I shouldn't leave China. This is a place I should be. And all of a sudden, massacre happened, and a lot of people, include my friends, my relatives, as well as influential people, like even the government officials, they helped out right after the massacre. And I'm the first student leader escaped from China. And since I was accepted already by Brandeis and a couple of other schools, so I'm just settled down quickly.
How do you like life on an American college campus? What do you like and what don't you like about it?
Well, this country's education system, I think, collectively is better than China, although there are a lot of disadvantages of it. But it's generally it's more creative. You have more you know, opportunities to really figure out in your in your 4 years undergraduate study, you know, what kind of academic as well as social goals you want to achieve, which compared to China, you really, if you choose something, you know, even before you get in university, you got to stick to it. You know, you got basically no choice to change it. And also, actually, I have to admit this, I'm not quite a college student. I don't spend all my time on campus, although I try to. I'm a full-time student, but meanwhile, I spend a lot of energy in the exile movement.
Do you know if your family, who is still in China, has ever been punished because of your activism?
Actually, it's only my mother there, because my father passed away, died after I, like a month after I escaped from China.
What about your sister?
They get her a lot of trouble in her work unit. She has to change to a foreign company, and they took away her passport, so there's no way for her to get out.
And your mother?
For my mother's case, because she is a medical doctor, you know, the government basically cannot do a lot to professional people, especially like doctors. And also her hospital, people there are very sympathetic to the movement. Actually, the head of her work unit, his son was my close friend in Peking University. So they're really sympathetic to her.
How do you feel about all the friends who you had to leave behind in China, friends who were behind bars now, or friends who died during the massacre?
Well, when I first came to this country, I felt a very deep guilty, you know, to them, because I'm lucky I get out, and here is so peaceful, so wonderful compared with China, and they have to stay in jail. They couldn't continue their study. They got all kind of political troubles. But more gradually, I felt, you know, the only point for me to escape from China is to carry forward the dream we had together in China, and they couldn't do it now. I can carry forward it, and I felt, you know, they're the courage of me. They really deepened and strengthened my commitment to this dream. And I always felt, no matter, you know, where they are, you know, in labor camp or classroom, receiving re-education or real education, in prison or in their graves, in hiding or in exile, they're always with me. And I think they're always with people who love China. And they're the reason for me to keep dreaming, keep going on this odyssey. And I hope, I dream, you know, someday every student on every campus, and, you know, every worker in every factory, every citizen in every city and village across China will one day taste freedom. And I know we tasted, we're almost there, you know, last spring, and I know this taste is sweet.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Shen Tang is now a student at Brandeis University, and he has a new book on China's pro-democracy movement and the massacre at Tiananmen Square. It's called Almost a Revolution. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.